Hello everyone, before we begin the episode, I'd like to take a brief moment to read a promo for a new true crime podcast from right here in Canada, which is brought to you by CuriousCast. Journey deep inside some of Canada's most notorious crimes with Global News crime reporter Nancy Hixt on a brand new podcast called Crime Beat. Nancy has worked the crime beat for more than 20 years and takes you deep inside actual criminal cases she has worked on. On this podcast, she provides meticulous details, new information, and exclusive interviews you didn't get on the news. It premieres on March 5th, 2019, so be sure to listen and subscribe to Crime Beat on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Thank you, and enjoy the show. July 12th, 2007. Sykesville, Pennsylvania. The fire department shows up at the burning home of 33-year-old Joey Lynn Offutt. The body of her 6-week-old infant son is found in the bathtub, but Joey herself is nowhere to be found. 3 days later, Joey's abandoned car is discovered over 60 miles away at an apartment complex where she had previously lived. It turns out that no one can confirm having seen Joey in the week prior to her disappearance, and while there is initial speculation that she might have killed her child and gone on the run, no trace of her is ever found. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and we've got a very odd missing persons case to cover today, the 2007 disappearance of Joey Lynn Offutt. This case was originally requested to me last year by a listener named Sam, and I've been hoping to cover it for a long time. I first learned about this story when it was featured on a 2012 episode of the TV show Disappeared. And even though this isn't one of the most well-known missing persons cases to be featured on that program, it's certainly one of the most bizarre. There are technically two victims in this story, as Joey was discovered to be missing after her house caught on fire in the middle of the night, and the remains of her 6-week-old son, Lex, were found in the bathtub. Since both Joey and her car had vanished, people initially wondered if Joey might have been responsible for the death of her child and ran away, as she suffered from developmental disabilities and was diagnosed as having the mind of a 14-year-old, which had a serious effect on her coping skills. However, her vehicle was soon found abandoned, and it seems very unlikely that Joey could have managed to stay off the radar this long if she were alive. An additional complication is that the last confirmed sighting of Joey took place a whole week before the house fire, so could Joey and her son have been dead that entire time? And if they were both murdered, who was responsible? This is going to be one of those cases in which it's very difficult to come up with an airtight theory about what happened, because there are a number of odd details which don't make much sense. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the unsolved disappearance of Joey Lynn Offutt. Our story begins in 2007 in Sykesville, Pennsylvania, a small borough located in Jefferson County. Our central figure is 33-year-old Joey Lynn Offutt, who originally hails from Warrenton, Virginia, and has spent the past 6 months living in a house which was purchased by her mother, Sherry Hallett. Joey suffers from developmental disabilities, as a psychologist once diagnosed her as having the mind of a 14-year-old. Ever since her parents divorced at the age of 3, Joey always had issues coping with problems. She was known for being a very sweet, good-natured person with an almost childlike innocence, but transitioning into adulthood was not easy for her, as she had trouble holding down jobs and maintaining long-term relationships, and often moved around a lot. Joey has 3 children, including a 9-year-old and 2-year-old daughter, the latter of whom was fathered by her on-again, off-again boyfriend, Alexis Brolin Jr., who had a son of his own from a previous relationship. On June 3rd of this year, Joey gave birth to her first son, Alexis Alfred Brolin III, who would go by the name Lex. In spite of having 2 children together, Joey and Alexis often had a rocky relationship, and even though they had lived together in the past, and were hoping to get married at some point in the future, they were not quite ready to start living together again just yet. This is what prompted Joey's mother, Sherry, to buy her a small house in the quiet community of Sykesville, hoping this would give her daughter the opportunity to settle down and raise her children. At this point, Alexis is living 30 minutes away from Joey in the town of Clearfield, and they both share custody of their kids. As July rolled around, Joey wanted to have some time alone with her newborn son, so she made arrangements for her youngest daughter to stay with Alexis, while her oldest daughter stayed with Sherry in Warrenton, Virginia. At approximately 4 a.m. on July 12th, many of the residents in Joey's neighborhood were awakened by a loud explosion. It turned out that Joey's house was on fire, so the fire department was immediately summoned to the scene. The fire consumed a large portion of the residence, but after they extinguished the blaze, the firemen were shocked to discover the charred remains of what appeared to be an infant child in the bathtub. DNA testing would eventually identify him as Joey's son, Lex. However, neither Joey nor her vehicle, a 1994 Saturn coupe, could be found at the scene. An autopsy was performed on Lex, and due to the condition of his body, investigators were unable to determine his exact cause of death, though they were able to determine he was likely already dead before the fire started. A gas can was found at the house, and it turned out an accelerant had been used in both the basement and the upstairs bathroom to start the fire, making this a clear-cut case of arson. Initially, there was speculation that Joey may have killed her son, accidentally or otherwise, and in a state of panic, decided to start a fire and burn down the house to cover up the crime. She then subsequently fled the scene in her vehicle and went on the run. However, while Joey's car keys were missing, her purse and identification were discovered in the rubble. Well, on July 15th, 3 days after the fire, Joey's Saturn coupe would be discovered over 60 miles away in State College, Pennsylvania. It was abandoned in the parking lot of the Nittany Gardens Apartments, a location where Joey and Alexis had previously lived together in 2003. But there was no sign of Joey herself, and none of the residents from the apartment complex could recall having seen anyone leave the vehicle there. One resident was positive that he saw the Saturn parked in the lot since July 13th, and thought it may have even been there as long as July 12th. Joey's family had suspicions that she did not actually abandon the vehicle herself, because it had been neatly backed up into its parking space. Since Joey was not a particularly good driver, and did not like to back into spots, there was skepticism about her being able to park the car so perfectly between the two lines. The driver's seat was also reclined in such a way to suggest that someone larger than Joey, who was only 5'3", had been behind the wheel. Luminol testing failed to turn up any forensic evidence inside the vehicle which suggested foul play, and fingerprint analysis came up empty as well. Investigators were unable to find any concrete evidence to suggest that Joey was still alive, as she never contacted anyone from her family, and her bank accounts were never touched. Her oldest daughter's birthday happened to take place 2 weeks after she disappeared, and concern grew when Joey made no attempt to contact her, causing great fear from her loved ones that she was dead. The case got even more puzzling when investigators attempted to trace Joey's movements prior to her disappearance and discovered that she actually hadn't been seen in a week. The last confirmed sighting of Joey took place on July 5th, when one of her neighbors walked past her on the sidewalk while she was pushing a stroller. The neighbor claimed that when he said hi to Joey, she didn't even acknowledge him, and he also said he could not recall seeing a baby inside her stroller. After the fire in Joey's house was put out, some raw hamburger meat was discovered on her kitchen counter, which had maggots crawling on it. Tests showed that the meat had probably been sitting there since sometime between July 3rd and the 5th, so did this mean that Joey and her son could have been dead for an entire week before the fire took place? Well, both Alexis and Joey's mother, Sherry, had attempted to contact her during that week, but failed to reach her. Prior to that, Joey, Alexis, and their kids had visited Sherry in Virginia so they could introduce her to baby Lex, and Joey's 9-year-old daughter wound up staying there with her grandmother while they returned back home to Pennsylvania. The last time Alexis could confirm seeing Joey was at her house on July 3rd. According to Alexis, they got into an argument because he did not like the way Joey was giving Lex a bath inside a dirty sink. Because of her developmental issues, Joey could not handle criticism very well, and her typical response to a fight would be to completely shut down and withdraw for a while. So Alexis said he left the house shortly before midnight and returned to his home in Clearfield in order to give Joey a chance to cool off. The following day, Alexis called Joey numerous times and left several messages, but she never called him back. Even though they had gotten into a fight, Alexis was still surprised not to hear from Joey, since they had been planning to visit his grandmother together to attend a 4th of July fireworks display that night. On July 5th, Alexis decided to go back to Joey's house to see her, but after knocking on the front door, there was no answer. Since Alexis did not possess a key to the house, he returned home. Alexis claimed he started to become concerned the following day when he was contacted by a home care nurse. Since Joey was an unemployed single mother, she was entitled to receive state aid, which involved a nurse from the home health agency visiting her house at regular intervals to provide care for her son. Well, Joey had a scheduled appointment for a house call on July 6th, but the nurse told Alexis that when she showed up, there was no answer at the front door, even though Joey's Saturn coupe was still parked outside. The nurse also said there was mail piled up outside, and that when she peeked in through the window, she could see a baby seat and diaper bag inside the house, which implied that Lex should have still been there. Things got really strange on July 7th when Alexis returned to Joey's house. Once again, there was no answer at the front door, but the big difference this time is that her Saturn coupe was no longer parked outside. Yet when Alexis went back to the house on July 8th, the car was parked outside again, even though he could not get any response when he knocked on the front door. After waiting for Joey for over an hour, Alexis decided to leave a note for her, apologizing for their previous argument and asking her to call him. In spite of this, Joey continued to not answer or return repeated phone calls, not only from Alexis, but from her mother. On July 11th, Alexis heard from the nurse from the home health agency who told him that Joey was still not answering the door and had missed another scheduled appointment, so Alexis decided to meet her at the house. They noticed that mail was still piled up at the front door and that Lex's child seat and diaper bag still appeared to be in the same place as when the nurse peeked through the window 5 days earlier, but in another strange turn of events, Joey's Saturn coupe was missing again. Alexis decided to leave one more note, informing Joey that if she did not contact him or the nurse by the following day, he was going to involve the police. Well, they still did not hear from Joey, so on July 12th, Alexis finally contacted the Pennsylvania State Police and was asked to visit the station to file a missing persons report. While he was there, Alexis learned about the fire which had taken place at Joey's house earlier that morning. It's also worth noting that even though Joey's Saturn coupe was eventually found in State College, it had returned to her house at some point after Alexis went there on July 11th, because witnesses recalled seeing it parked out there at approximately 3 a.m. on July 12th, 1 hour before the fire. Investigators would make some interesting discoveries when they examined Joey's computer and looked into her internet activity. Since Joey was known for being a naive and trusting person who liked to meet people on the internet, there was speculation that she may have crossed paths with someone who did her harm. In fact, for this reason, Sherry Hallett was granted temporary custody of Joey's children in the fall of 2006. This all came about after Alexis uncovered some disturbing emails on his computer and brought them to Sherry's attention. It turned out that Joey had been corresponding online with a man from California who told Joey he was a photographer. After convincing Joey to send him a photo of herself, he told her that he wanted her to pose as a fashion model, but then eventually said that he was interested in using her for some pornography. Well, Sherry became terrified that Joey was communicating with a sexual predator and potentially jeopardizing her children's safety, so she notified the authorities and was granted temporary custody of Joey's two daughters. Sherry informed Joey of this news while some sheriff's deputies were at her house, and she did not take it well. Joey wound up reacting violently and had to be handcuffed by the police and taken away. After this took place, Joey informed her mother that she had become pregnant with her third child. Anyway, after undergoing counseling and agreeing not to speak to any more strange men over the internet, Joey finally regained custody of her kids. It turned out that weeks before she went missing, the internet service in Joey's house was turned off due to non-payment, so investigators could not find anything on her computer to suggest that her internet activity played a role in her disappearance. However, there were some interesting revelations about Alexis. In February of 2005, Joey joined an internet group for single mothers and made 525 posts over the course of the next 2.5 years. She often posted about her rocky relationship with Alexis, claiming that she feared potential physical harm from him for both herself and her children, and had gotten a protection from abuse order against Alexis at one point. In 2006, Joey posted about how Alexis's son had sexually assaulted her oldest daughter, which led to her being removed from their home, so Joey had to fight to get her back. However, by March of 2007, Joey started posting that she had grown a lot more optimistic about the relationship. While she said that she was not ready to completely trust Alexis, she believed they could work things out and eventually get married. She also mentioned that Alexis was a felon and a former drug addict, but that having children had completely changed him. Joey's last official post in the group took place on June 5th, where she announced the birth of her newborn son Lex, and said she hoped to post photos of him soon. Well, Alexis was questioned and interviewed by police multiple times, and was very cooperative with the investigation. He allowed his computer and phone records to be checked, and no evidence could be uncovered to implicate him in Joey's disappearance. Alexis initially agreed to take a polygraph, and said he was told he did well on the test, but the police later approached him and informed him that he did not actually pass, so he was asked if he would consent to a second polygraph. On the advice of his family, Alexis declined to take the test again. Alexis has since gotten remarried, and while police have never named him as a suspect, he has never been completely eliminated either. Joey's family set up a website devoted to her case at findjoey.org and have offered a $25,000 reward for information, and the case would be featured on episodes of America's Most Wanted and Disappeared. Sherry Hallett had her daughter declared legally dead in 2016, and investigators now believe that Joey was the victim of foul play. But even though over a decade has passed, the investigation has failed to turn up any solid leads, so the circumstances of Joey Lynn Offit's disappearance, as well as the death of her infant son, remain unclear. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So this story is a bit reminiscent of another case I featured on the podcast a few years ago, which ironically enough, took place in another town in Pennsylvania, Stroudsburg. You might recall the episode I did about Edward Mapps, who vanished in 1962 after his wife and infant daughter were found dead inside their burning house. Mapps was listed as one of the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives for a while, but he was never found, and there's always been debate about whether he actually murdered his family and started the fire, or if his father-in-law was actually the real culprit and disposed of Mapps' body in order to frame him for the crime. Well, we have a fairly similar scenario in this case. A deceased infant was found inside a burning house, and the child's parent has gone missing, so there's some ambiguity about whether she decided to go on the run because she was responsible for what happened, or if she was another victim. Of course, given that there's been no trace of Joey Lynn Offit at all in nearly 12 years, I think there's virtually no chance she's still alive, but the circumstances of what actually happened to her are incredibly murky. This is one of those cases where it's very difficult to figure out an airtight theory which makes 100% complete sense because nothing really adds up. Now, I know it's something of a running joke about how true crime shows often go out of their way to paint their victims and their stories in the best possible light and practically make them sound like perfect individuals. Well, that's definitely not how Joey Lynn Offutt was portrayed when her case was featured on Disappeared. While everyone who knew Joey described her as a very sweet, good-hearted woman, it sounds like her developmental issues did not always make her the most easy person to be around. Like I mentioned earlier, even though she was in her early 30s, a psychologist diagnosed her as having the mind of a 14-year-old, and during her interview on Disappeared, Joey's mother described her as being mentally handicapped. While Joey could certainly function and live a normal life, the impression I get is that she was stunted and just did not have the maturity level to handle the real world and maintain any focus. She did attend Shepherd University in West Virginia to study journalism, but wound up dropping out after only a year because of poor grades, and after that, she just had a hard time holding down a job and pretty much drifted around a lot. And of course, she also had a lot of difficulty with relationships, which explains the strange circumstances of her relationship with Alexis, as they lived together for a time and had two children together, but then reached the point where they had to live separately while raising these children, though they still hoped they would be able to get married in the future and become a family again. It sounds like one of Joey's main drawbacks is that she had a particularly hard time handling criticism, because if she was angry with someone, it sounds like she would essentially act like a child and give them the silent treatment for a while. And instead of dealing with her problems, Joey seemed to have a tendency to run away from them, or just hope they went away on their own if she ignored them. After hearing this, you get the impression that if Joey was somehow responsible for the death of her infant son, she could have panicked and ran away in order to avoid dealing with the consequences. But if that's the case, then what actually happened to her? Well, if you look up any discussion about this case online, you'll see that quite a few people have their suspicions about Alexis Brolin, Joey's on-again, off-again boyfriend, and the father of two of her children. On the surface, this does seem like a logical conclusion, as they definitely had a rocky relationship. But if you watch the Disappeared episode about this case, and see Alexis's interviews, it's harder to picture him being involved, as I personally believe he does come across as sincere. Remember, he not only lost Joey, but his 6-week-old son as well, and I do think he sounds genuinely broken up when he's talking about it. The way the episode frames it, you get the impression that Joey was to blame for many of the issues in their relationship. Joey's mother and sister are also interviewed, and it seems like they got along fairly well with Alexis, and they never give off any indication that they suspect him. The only time the episode casts any suspicion in Alexis's direction is when they're talking about the circumstances of his polygraph test, which seemed pretty odd to me. According to Alexis, the first time he took the polygraph, he was told he did well, but I'm not sure he was specifically told that he passed. But when police approached Alexis about taking the polygraph again, they told him he did not pass the first time, so on the advice of his family, Alexis declined to take it. The detective who was interviewed then goes on to say that while Alexis was initially very cooperative with the investigation, he's become a bit less cooperative as time has gone on, but they still don't have any reason to consider him a suspect. Well, as I'm sure you know, polygraphs are not considered to be reliable, so I really do not blame Alexis for not wanting to take one a second time. If he failed the test the first time around, why did they not tell him that to begin with? It's almost like investigators were making some sort of attempt to trip Alexis up, so I'd be very reluctant about taking a polygraph under those circumstances, even if I was completely innocent. So while the Disappeared episode paints Alexis in a mostly positive light, what's particularly interesting is that they make no mention whatsoever of some of the unsavory accusations Joey made against him. As you recall, Joey spent 2.5 years in an internet group for single mothers and made some pretty unsettling posts which did not paint Alexis in a positive light. She claimed he was a felon and former drug addict who had the potential to harm her. She had gotten a protection from abuse order against him, and that Alexis's son from a previous relationship was sexually abusing her oldest daughter. Well, the Disappeared episode does not mention any of this stuff at all, and quite frankly, I have no idea if it's true. Yes, I know this is a TV show, and it could have been slanted to make Alexis look better than he really was, But let's not forget that Joey's family also participated in the episode, and they never made any of these accusations toward him either. In 2006, Joey posted that her daughter had been removed from her home because of her abuse at the hand of Alexis's son, and that she had to fight to get her back. Well, it is true that Joey's daughter was removed from her home that year, but it was for something that Joey did. Her own mother, Sherry, confirmed that she was granted temporary custody of the children because Joey had been communicating with a man online who was a potential sexual predator, and Sherry feared for her grandchildren's safety. According to Sherry, Alexis was the one who brought this to her attention in the first place after he intercepted some disturbing emails, and Joey had to be dragged away by the police in handcuffs because she threw a violent fit over the whole thing. So could this mean that none of the stuff that Joey was saying about Alexis in her online group was true? Well, I can't 100% prove or disprove anything Joey said, but if she was lying, I would not be overly surprised. I really hate to say something like that about a missing victim, but let's not forget that Joey was a 33-year-old woman with the mind of a 14-year-old. Going online and spreading false rumors about someone they're angry with sounds exactly like the type of thing an immature 14-year-old would do. One detail which makes me doubt the veracity of Joey's claims is that she specifically posted that Alexis's son was abusing her 5-year-old daughter. But she made these posts in 2006, when her two daughters would have been 8 years old and 1 year old, so the math just doesn't add up. I'll also add that there's a thread in the Web Sleuths forum about this case, and in 2014, one of the posters there claimed they performed a docket search for every court in Pennsylvania and found no record of Joey ever having filed a protection from abuse order against Alexis. Again, I hate to accuse Joey of lying, but no one from her family or law enforcement has ever publicly confirmed any of these accusations she made towards Alexis. Regardless of whether these claims are true or not, that doesn't mean I completely rule out Alexis as a suspect, but I'll get back to him in a little while. For now, I want to address the theory that Joey could have been responsible for the death of her newborn son, Lex. There's been a lot of speculation that she may have been suffering from postpartum depression, and sadly, postpartum depression has played a role in some cases in which mothers have murdered their children, such as Andrea Yates. During his disappeared interview, Alexis expressed his belief that Joey might have had postpartum depression and was taking medication for it, but investigators said they could not find any documentation, such as pharmaceutical prescriptions, to support this. But even so, it's definitely possible that Joey could have been suffering from this without being officially diagnosed. Of course, if Joey was responsible for Lex's death, that doesn't necessarily mean it was murder, as it could have been accidental. The last time Alexis claimed he saw Joey, he was angry about her giving the baby a bath inside a dirty sink, and since Lex's body was found inside a bathtub, what if his death was an accidental drowning? Given her immaturity, it's reasonable to assume that no matter what happened, Joey probably would have panicked and reacted badly. She could have cut off all contact with everyone to avoid taking responsibility for what she did, which is why no one could get a hold of her for an entire week. In fact, even if Lex succumbed to sudden infant death syndrome, and Joey was not even at fault, she still may have reacted the same way. The last confirmed sighting of Joey took place on July 5th, where a neighbor walked past her while she was pushing a stroller. He claimed that she wouldn't acknowledge him, and he could not even be certain a baby was inside the stroller. While some people have taken this as an indication that Lex may have already been dead by this point, and that the trauma caused Joey to have a complete mental breakdown and go into a daze, which is why she was pushing an empty stroller around. But it's worth noting that just because the neighbor said he did not recall seeing a baby in the stroller, that doesn't necessarily mean it was empty. For all we know, he simply could have missed Lex, and this sighting doesn't have any real significance. The problem is that due to the condition of Lex's burned body, investigators were unable to determine his exact cause of death, though they were pretty certain that Lex was already dead before the fire started. Regardless, even if Joey killed her child and had a complete breakdown, would she really have been capable of committing arson by spreading gasoline around the house and setting it on fire to cover up the crime? And if she fled the scene in her own vehicle, why leave her purse behind? There has been speculation that the truth lies somewhere in the middle, and that Joy may have been responsible for Lex's death, but then became a victim at the hands of someone else. For instance, if Alexis went over to the house and found out that Joey had killed her son, he might have flown into a rage and killed her. He then proceeded to set fire to the place to destroy evidence, disposed of Joey's body somewhere, and then abandoned her car at another location to give off the impression that she went on the run. Or perhaps Joey caused Lex's death and turned to someone else for help, but this person proceeded to take advantage of Joey and killed her before burning down the house. The problem with latching onto any theory in particular is that the timeline of events in the week prior to Joey's disappearance is very confusing, but let's start at the beginning. The last confirmed sighting of Joey is from July 5th, a full 7 days before the fire, and no one can be certain if she was even alive during that entire time period. Before that, the last time anyone recalled speaking with Joey was on July 3rd, where she had an argument with Alexis over her decision to bathe their son in a dirty sink. After that, Alexis and Joey's family made numerous attempts to contact her over the next week, but couldn't reach her. If you believe Alexis is the perpetrator, then you could assume that he killed Joey on July 3rd, and his story about the argument is a lie. Perhaps there are some remnants of truth to it, and the real story is that Joey accidentally drowned Lex while bathing him, and this prompted Alexis to kill her in a fit of rage. But if you believe the sighting from the neighbor is accurate, then that means Joey was still alive for at least 2 more days after her fight with Alexis. However, a part of me wonders if the neighbor may have gotten the date wrong, and that he actually passed by Joey pushing a stroller on another day prior to July 5th. The reason I question this is because Alexis claimed he tried to get a hold of Joey several times on July 4th, but she never returned his calls. They had originally planned to visit Alexis's grandmother for a 4th of July fireworks celebration, but even if Joey was still angry with Alexis, you'd think she might have still been inclined to attend this get-together rather than completely ignoring him. But then again, if something happened with Joey and Lex on July 3rd or the 4th, this might explain why she never got back to him and was seen walking through the neighborhood in a possibly disoriented state on July 5th. It's after this when things get really weird, as both Alexis and a nurse from the home health agency visited Joey's house on multiple occasions over the next week and got no answer at the front door. Even if Joey still didn't want to speak with Alexis, you would think she'd answer the door for her scheduled appointment with the nurse, since this was free medical care for her child. But the discovery of the raw hamburger meat on Joey's kitchen counter after the fire is a pretty ominous sign that something went horribly wrong around this time period, as the presence of maggots seemed to indicate it had been sitting there since between July 3rd and the 5th. Since none of the visits to Joey's home took place until the 5th or after, the logical conclusion is that something happened with Joey prior to this, and most disturbingly, poor Lex may have been lying dead inside the house for an entire week before the fire department arrived. Now, most of the evidence seems to suggest there was no activity at the house during this time period, since the mail kept piling up at the front door, and each time Alexis and the nurse looked inside through the window, Lex's baby seat and diapers remained in the same place. However, the most perplexing aspect of this mystery is the apparent disappearance and reappearance of Joey's Saturn coupe. So to recap, according to Alexis and the nurse, the Saturn coupe was parked in front of the house on July 5th and 6th, was missing on the 7th, returned on the 8th, was missing again on the 11th, but was confirmed by other witnesses to be parked outside during the early morning hours of the 12th, approximately 1 hour before the fire. And of course, it subsequently turned up in State College 3 days later. So does the disappearance and reappearance of the vehicle prove that Joey was still alive from July 5th until the 12th? Well, if Joey was dead this whole time, and someone else killed her, why would the perpetrator move the Saturn back and forth from the house on multiple occasions? Luminol testing found no trace of forensic evidence in the vehicle to suggest foul play, so I'm not sure anyone used Joey's car to transport her body somewhere. We technically only have Alexis's word that the car was gone on the 7th, but the nurse was able to corroborate that it was missing on the 11th. If you believe Alexis is behind this whole thing, then you could assume that he moved the Saturn back and forth in order to give off the false impression that someone else was responsible for what happened, and that perhaps his constant phone calls, visits to the house, and interactions with the nurse were nothing more than a charade in order to feign concern for Joey. After all, it does seem convenient that Alexis would wait an entire week to file a missing persons report and finally get around to visiting the police only hours after Joey's house was set on fire. However, it must be said that investigators looked into Alexis's movements that week, and his story did seem to check out. Phone records showed that he called Joey numerous times, and witnesses back up his claims that he visited her house on multiple occasions. Even if all this stuff was a charade in order for Alexis to divert suspicion away from himself, it doesn't sound like police found any noticeable holes in his story or red flags to indicate that he was lying about anything. You might recall that Alexis left a note for Joey the last time he visited the house on July 11th, informing her that if she did not contact him by the next day, he would go to the police. This note was found at the scene when the house caught fire, though if you believe Alexis is guilty, you could infer that he wrote this to make himself look like a concerned boyfriend and provide an excuse for why he didn't go to the police until after the fire. However, if another person was responsible for what happened to Joey, they could have returned to the house and come across Alexis's note themselves and learned that the police were about to become involved. In response, the perpetrator decided to commit arson and set fire to Joey's house in the middle of the night in order to destroy potential evidence. But if someone else did this, who could it have been? Well, it's very tempting to believe that Joey might have been harmed by someone she met on the internet. Remember, there was already one documented case of Joey interacting with a guy she met online who convinced her to send him photos of herself and was attempting to lure her into doing pornography. Since Joey was described as being a naive and trusting person, she would have made an easy target for a sexual predator and potentially crossed paths with someone who murdered both herself and her infant son. But the main problem with this theory is that Joey's internet service was cut off at her house a month before her disappearance due to non-payment. Sure, Joey still could have met someone online before that, but investigators did check her hard drive and didn't find any evidence that she'd recently been interacting with someone who might have taken advantage of her. Of course, that doesn't rule out the possibility that Joey met someone offline who did her harm. It could have been something as simple as a dangerous stranger knocking on her front door and Joey being so trusting that she let him into her house. One detail I'm unclear on is whether there were any signs of forced entry at the residence. When Alexis visited the house throughout the week, he claimed he couldn't go inside because the place was locked and he didn't have a key. But of course, one of the biggest issues with there being a fire is that when the fire department is summoned to the scene, they're naturally going to force their way inside and make it a lot more difficult to determine if there was a previous break-in. If there were any more confirmed sightings of Joey and Lex in the week preceding the fire, I might be more inclined to think this was the work of a random perpetrator who entered the home, set fire to the place, and abducted Joey from the scene inside her own vehicle before disposing of her body. However, the fact that Joey was missing for an entire week and may have possibly been dead that whole time leads me to suspect this crime was a lot more calculated and personal in nature. I also do not think it's a coincidence that Joey's abandoned Saturn was found parked at an apartment complex in State College where she had lived 4 years earlier. This would imply that Joey drove the car there herself, but the way the driver's seat was positioned and the uncharacteristic way she neatly backed the vehicle into the parking space created a lot of suspicion that Joey did not leave the car there. So the alternate explanation is that the Saturn was deliberately abandoned at that location in order to give off the false impression that Joey drove there, but the problem is, how many people would have known that Joey once lived at that apartment complex? Well, this is another detail which seems to point to the obvious suspect being Alexis, since he and Joey live there together, but there are some issues with this. Granted, I can't account for Alexis's whereabouts during the time period Joey went missing, and I don't know how thoroughly police looked into his alibi, but State College is about an hour and a half drive from Sykesville, and it's also an hour from Alexis's home in Clearfield. So if Alexis drove the Saturn all the way to State College to abandon it, how did he get back home? It's unclear when exactly that vehicle wound up in the apartment complex parking lot, but one of the residents was certain that they saw it there on July 13th, and possibly as early as the 12th. We have witnesses who could confirm it was parked outside Joey's house at around 3 a.m. on the 12th, and Alexis's whereabouts are accounted for later that day because he went to the police station to file a missing persons report before he was informed about the fire. So assuming that the eyewitness sighting of the Saturn being in State College on the 12th is accurate, that means Alexis would have had to set fire to Joey's house in the middle of the night, driven her car 65 miles to the apartment complex to abandon it, and then somehow traveled 40 miles back to Clearfield before he went to see the police later that day. I mean, that's theoretically possible, but Alexis either would have needed an accomplice to give him a ride back home, or he somehow secured alternate transportation without leaving a paper trail. And keep in mind that this guy was also watching over two kids at the time, one of whom was Joey's two-year-old daughter, so how exactly could Alexis have done all this traveling around without anyone noticing he was missing? But I guess the big question is, who else besides Alexis knew the significance of that particular apartment complex? I don't know. Every time I lean towards Alexis being the most likely perpetrator, I start thinking about how everything would have played out, and there's just so much which doesn't fit. You also have to remember that if he was responsible for murdering Joey, he also might have been responsible for killing his newborn infant son. And if Joey was the one who killed the child, and Alexis reacted by killing her, he still would have had to go through the process of committing arson and setting fire to the house with his son's body inside, which is incredibly cold-hearted. Whatever issues Alexis might have had with Joey, he already had a two-year-old daughter with her, so what motive would he have to get rid of Lex? If Alexis was guilty, I can see him feigning concern for a few days by making a bunch of phone calls and visiting Joey's house to pretend to look for her, but why keep up the charade for an entire week? If there was crucial evidence in the house that needed to be torched, why wait that long to do it? Alexis probably would have made himself look less suspicious if he had just set fire to the house immediately after Joey was killed, and it's pretty remarkable that he could keep this whole thing up without being caught in any lies or any substantial holes opening up in his story. Overall, I think I lean more towards an unknown third party being responsible for what happened, but the investigation has never uncovered any suspects, and I have no idea who this third party could be. I say this quite often when I analyze cases like this on the podcast, but I can't help but think there's one crucial piece of the puzzle missing in this story, which would shed a lot more light on things. I don't know. I hate to accuse a missing person of being responsible for something like this, but part of me still wonders if Joey did cause Lex's death, accidentally or otherwise, and turned to someone else for help, but this person subsequently harmed her and disposed of her body. The only thing I'm certain of is that Joey is no longer with us, but until her remains can be found, I think this one is destined to remain a baffling mystery. Anyway, the website Joey's family launched about her case is still up at findjoey.org, though it hasn't been updated since 2014. But if you happen to have any information about her case, they have a tip line you can call at 1-877-440-JOEY. That's 1-877-440-5639. Or you can contact the Pennsylvania State Police at 814-371-4652. That's 814-371-4652. However, if you have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you have a moment, please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We've already produced some exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and last month, to commemorate us recently passing our third anniversary, I released a bonus episode in which I discussed my personal top 10 favorite episodes of The Trail Went Cold, and provided some exclusive behind-the-scenes info on how these episodes came about. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to take a moment to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Elizabeth N.W. and Melanie P. Thank you all so much for your support. I also just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. Need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. And incidentally, in case you haven't seen the news on social media, The Trail Went Cold just won an award over 2 weeks ago at the Canadian Podcasting Awards in the category Outstanding Main Title Theme Music for a Series. So yes, that means that Vince Nitro is now officially an award-winning composer. So a big congratulations to him. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for another episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶